think it's considered blackness.
Psalm 19, if nobody has anything to talk about. We've all talked numerous times about the first part of the psalm in bananas because of the studying of the stars. It defines that the heavens declare the glory. And then John has written the song starting in verse 7 through verse 11. But tonight we're going to look at verse 12 through 14. Who can understand his errors? Cleanse thou me from secret faults. Keep back thy servant also from presumptuous sin. Let them not have dominion over me. Then shall I be upright, and I shall be innocent from the great transgression. And let the words of my mouth, the fruit of that is the words of my mouth, the meditation of my heart be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, my strength and my redeemer. The great transgression is what we're about to do battle with. The great transgression, from your standpoint, is you. What defines you now? Not what defined you when you were a little kid. Not what little grove stuff you went through and are going through. None of those things. The great transgression is today what defines you. Now, do you understand that the predicate for this, do you understand what I've just said is the basis for what, anybody disagree?
That the great transgression is?
You.
Yeah.
Now, let me talk for a minute. Do you remember when you were little kids, we've talked about this, but at some point, this definition of you had to start, obviously. Everything about the child when it's very, very young has the component of a sense of impending doom or disaster. And everything that happens to the child is a way to avoid what they believe or sense to be impending doom and disaster. Do you understand that?
Like they're going to be left or
right.
Get something to eat or...
Now, the child doesn't know the meaning of words. It just knows the meaning of stuff. Things that are successful or failures. So what they end up doing is they believe that only magic or ritual or prayer can tame that fear or dispel the anxiety. Mostly magic.
What were the others you said?
Ritual or prayer. They're all the same. Magic, ritual, prayer are all the same. Charms. Amulets. Security blankets, dolls, words, actions of screaming or not screaming. All of them are, to the child's mind, magic or ritual or some liturgy or prayer to dispel those fears and anxiety. You understand? A kid doesn't know anything. It's just doing stuff. Now, the problem with all that stuff is that stuff is what's defined you now, today. That's why, what we just said, who can understand his error? Cleanse thou me from secret faults. Keep back thy servant also from presumption. Then let them not have dominion over me. Then shall I be upright, and I shall be innocent from the great transgression. If you could see yourself from outside of yourself for the full however many years you've been alive, you would see it as one continual source of ritual and magic to avoid the sense of impending doom. Now that's a pretty wild thing for me to say. I can't believe you're buying it.
Well,
it's true.
Operate on that.
I don't know what I thought you were going to talk about, and I wasn't really paying attention. But when I heard a sense of impending doom, it was like I had been sitting in a dark room and someone turned the light on. And that's where I live.
That's where I live
for 44 years. That is where I live. A good day is when the sense of impending doom is not quite so close.
Yeah, compressed all the busy words to say that. I mean, they all say that. All the things I've got on my paper are responses to impending doom.
Now, the small and a lot. What I'm. Let me tell you this. What I'm talking to you now, and the way this came to me was because of Johnny. Johnny is the most impossible child that I've ever seen, because he doesn't respond to fear of punishment or reward. That's an amazing phenomenon. He responds to punishment, but he doesn't respond to fear of punishment, and he doesn't respond to promise or even to reward itself. I mean, that's mind-blowing in terms of its implications, which we'll discuss at some other point. But Johnny's problem, Johnny's persona, is what gave meat to what we're going to do, what we're talking about here. What's the matter with you?
I'm just thinking about Angela while you're talking about her. She's kind of similar to that.
Now, no child, none of those little hunks of protoplasm that are somehow involved with us can assess the world as it is, or as we see it. Certainly not as it is in reality. To them and to you as the child, and I'm talking to you, to this point, to the real you, not this bullshit persona that you've put on as a face.
Yeah.
You can't assess your world. Mm-hmm. Everything is strange. Mm-hmm. Everything is uncontrollable. Yours too, if you took your blinders off.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the definition of growing up, let me give you a new one. The real definition of growing up is anxiety in the face of helplessness.
What?
That's the stimulus. That's if you had to say a sentence about what is growing up means. It's, or a few words, it's the stage of what we call growing up is a state of being in a state of anxiety in the face of helplessness.
That's the process that you pass through.
It's where you are.
But that's not grown up, that's growing up, right?
Where you are. That's why you yell adolescence.
That's what he said, it's the process of growing up as opposed to being grown up.
Yeah, but being grown up, there aren't any grown ups here.
if there were,
well, nobody's saying there is.
Okay.
I'm trying to understand what you're saying.
Okay.
Jeez.
Anxiety in the face of helplessness. Anxiety in the face of helplessness. Now tell me that doesn't define every one of you. After 14 years of being a partaker of the greatest mystery of the universe, whose promise is peace without condition, you're still defined as a being in the state of anxiety in the face of helplessness. Why? How can that be?
We don't experience it, we're missing out on growing up. You gotta go through this stuff to get to the top. You can't just be there.
We don't push against
those. That's exactly it.
Right,
you don't face it. The state of adolescence is spiritual adolescence. Is by definition the state of cowardice. And that defines stealth.
Some of this.
Why? Because of the great transgression. The article, great transgression, to put it simple, is you trying to get it right. Even more so, your pathetic, neurotic, psychotic need to get it right. Even in the face of the certainty that all is vanity, even in the face of the experience of your life being in a state of anxiety in the face of helplessness, even in the certainty of the knowledge of the cross, there is something so deeply embedded within you that you must get it right. The great transgression. The great transgression. On that long span of immaturity, from the point in time in which you first had an awareness of self until this very moment, is the process where you're still trying to lock in the I's and the not I's, the I am's and I am not's. Therefore, scriptures like, for me to live as Christ is a mockery to you, because the great transgression wins. You're still trying to get who the I's and the not I's are. This is the mortal, this is the battle to the death.
I was just thinking of good examples. I'd love to be able to say, nah. I mean, that's the thing of getting it right there, being able to go, no, no. But I know better.
Am I communicating with anyone?
Yeah, it's like
feel like there's, you're saying there's one core thing I've been trying to get right all my life, and yet the way I live day to day, the way I respond day to day is it's not one thing, it's 500 things.
But it's really only one thing.
Okay. All right. I don't understand, and that hasn't been uncovered to me, what that one thing is. I mean, all the things that you said attendant to that, I mean, they're all there.
Oh, I know.
Pointing.
You're saying there's one thing we've been trying to get right?
Right.
That we're not aware of, that it's behind...
It's the key to everything in the universe.
No, it's the key to...
Is everybody's the same kind of thing? Or
yes, everybody's exactly the same. No. The great transgression. The great transgression. That's why we've been studying all this. The real, you know, other than Joanne and Josanna's ridiculous stuff about wanting to do the high places alone. The real impetus for us to attack this at this point in time is that there can be no burnt offering here. Now, can you capture for a moment that you spent a lifetime doing things to avoid being in a state of vulnerability? Mm-hmm. That every one of your opinions and belief systems, every one of your automatic responses, your activities, have simply been, you call them a thousand things. You call them careers, you call them lovers and friends, you call them children, hobbies, work, on and on. But all of them have one common point, and that is to avoid being vulnerable. Now, even you're talking about being vulnerable. I mean, I used to use that as one of the greatest lines to get laid in the world. But the talk about being vulnerable is to avoid being vulnerable. I don't think I'm communicating.
It's to soften up somebody so when you get closer to, if you really do want to try and be vulnerable, you'll be protected, which is not the same as being vulnerable.
Yeah.
It's like a build up, you know. I'm about to be vulnerable here. It's like putting up a cushion or something.
Just listen a minute. You don't have to go there. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Etc., etc., etc. The Beatitudes define the condition that is discussed or prayed for in Psalm 19. Who can understand his error? Cleanse thou me from secret fault. Keep back thy servant also from presumption. Let them not have dominion over me. Then shall I be upright, and I shall be innocent from the great transgression. You can hear all of the God stuff from now until hell freezes over, and as long as the great transgression has dominion over you, it will be nothing. It will have no efficacy. There will be no change in your life. There will be no power in your life. There will only be an endless attempt to get it right. It's just got many kinds of different religious stuff attached to it. So somehow you have to go from a lifetime of avoiding vulnerability, fleeing from it, manipulating yourself out of it, to a point where vulnerability is the normal course, where if you're not vulnerable, it'll be so terrible to you that you cannot stand it, that you'll get sick. Now, there are some of you that are great at faking vulnerability. I mean, really good. Yeah, I won't pick anybody at night. Well, let's save that for a minute. Huh?
Would you get to the bottom of it? Do me a favor. You're using the phrase "get it right" and the word vulnerability. Can you relate that to this thing about the sense of impending doom? The sense of impending doom rings a bell.
Okay. Well, let me. This process. If you look at, we've been studying myth. Well, that's all we do is lately in Bananas, is study myth. But whether it's myth or legend or fairy tale or religious stories, the common denominator of all of them is this, a tale of vulnerability with a way out, with a hook. Mickey Mouse, he's the most popular little idiot thingy in the world because he is vulnerable and yet through wit outwits the dangerous and stupid cat. The cat being a metaphor for the phenomena of helplessness and anxiety and danger. Mickey Mouse is the phenomenon for the vulnerable little being that's going to be eaten by the cat, but is successful in his outwitting of him. It doesn't matter whether it's the Grail legends, it doesn't matter whether it's Mickey Mouse, it doesn't matter whether it's Tales of Hercules, it doesn't matter as modern minds understand them. All of them are the same. It doesn't matter whether it's all these movies and romance novels. The common denominator is the avoidance of this feeling of helplessness and anxiety and impending doom by all kinds of different tricks. Now those tricks are all magic. They're all forbidden in the law of God. But you use them constantly. You've used them, the sorcery and magic that you've used is all that which is defining you tonight. There's no definition of you that exists within you that isn't there as the result of sorcery or magic. Now, somehow get rid of, somehow get away from this feeling of vulnerability. The only reason you're here in this group is because somehow you think that by coming here, you will stem the fear of vulnerability. You will be in a position to avoid the helplessness and the feeling of anxiety that exists outside in the world, which is so awesome and so terrible.
I was just thinking of, when we talked the other night about the being prepared to be eaten, as bread. That in our view of a good movie would be somebody who had done all that, but then, in the last minute, got out of it.
Man.
And then we had a happy ending, everybody would get out of the movie, but wow, it's great. But if you have a movie where the bread is actually eaten, in the spirit it would be, wow, that's a wonderful movie. But in the way we see it, it's like, downer, some kind of bad news.
Where did the sense of impending doom come from?
The moment you cut the umbilical cord, you weren't.
What is it, separation or?
Well, it's, yeah, I mean, it's, it is. I mean, it's like the first thing, you know, when you're a little kid, there's only really two primal perceptions. One is the first, they say there's fear of falling and there's, maybe it's the only, I don't think so. I think the only two primal perceptions are, number one, a sense of well-being, and number two, a sense of pain or discomfort. So you do everything in your power to gain a sense of well-being and avoid pain and discomfort. That's what's happening. Now right now, the kid that's in her belly, he's in a sense of well-being because from the mystery of God, God has demanded that everything in that mother goes towards that baby.
Yeah.
But when it's time to bring to birth, then
is cast out, and what it's cast into is a sense of impending doom.
That's right.
That's what we, so far in our lives, have lived in, moved in, and had our being.
Right. Everything that you have known, everything that has defined your Eunice, is this impending doom and doing things by magic to avoid it. That's why your religion, not just yours, but that's why religion, I hate it so bad.
That's that thing about sort of fear. What is it? Through fear of death?
Subject to bondage
to fear of death.
Now, there's something yet within you, within all men, that believes in transcendency. Do you know what transcendency means? It's somehow there's a component within you that knows or feels or thinks that it can be transcendent above. It can rise above or exist beyond these two primal impulses of trying to find out and search and struggle for well-being and avoid pain and discomfort. Now that sense of the possibility of transcendency is the only hope you've got. Now, it's not a very wise hope, because by all of your own experience thus far, you've shown it isn't a true hope. Thus far, every one of you have tried to gain the ascendancy, the sense of ascendancy or transcendency, over these two primal stimuli of trying to get in a sense of well-being and avoid a sense of pain and discomfort. You've tried every device that you can think of to get there. You've tried drugs, you've tried alcohol, you've tried marriage, you've tried the Bible, you've tried hanging out. I mean, there is nothing in your life that you haven't tried to gain this transcendency over the need for well-being and the avoidance of pain and discomfort. You've tried God, but none of it's worked. You know what I'm talking about?
The longer you talk, the more, there's this rising sense of angry frustration over all these things rising up within me.
We're liable to go to blows over this one. Now, you gotta see. What?
If you didn't have the sense of impending doom before you got here,
you got it now.
But think how you've done it. Try to remember as a child. Watch the children. They're doing magic to try to gain or try to rise above it. Magic little rituals over and over, little incantations. So are you, constantly. Little stuff to achieve transcendency. Oh. Call Ole. Let's have a meeting. Let's read the Bible. Read the right scripture. And you'll get it right. Go over here and find the right little book to read. Read the right song. Or sing the right song. It's all magic. It's all sorcery. So you go through the process of, you find out the sorcery doesn't work very well. And so what do? You get caught, like Doug does, constantly, in this tremendous sense of immobilization. He becomes immobilized. With Rex, he goes out and gets drunk.
That's a lot of fun, too.
Huh?
That's a lot of fun, too.
Yeah, it's wonderful. You know, with Gary, he goes into his closet in his mind and lives in his usury. And whatever it is, there is an area, you reach a point where this thing, your magic doesn't work, and you have to escape the sense of impending doom and disaster and helplessness that you're feeling. Why? The great transgression. Still trying to get it right. Communicating?
Mm-hmm.
Are you talking to them too?
Well, I hate to risk getting yelled at, but I still get it right. How does get it right relate to the sense of
Get it right means only... No. You've missed the point. There's only two places. There's only really two arenas in you. One is the sense of well-being. That's what getting it right means. The other is the sense of pain and discomfort, and that's what getting it wrong means. Those are the only two positions.
So with every pain and discomfort you have from birth, you have created another... little mechanism.
A little magical right.
Escape that the next time.
Right. And then for every time that you've had a sense or a moment of well-being, you've created a mantra and a situation and a series to so that you can get back there again.
Yeah. Maintain it.
But both of them are the I's and the I am nots. You got it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So again, yourself, you as a self, are defined in this world by a series of magical rites. Some of you are good at magic, some of you are bad. We are all bad in comparison to the world. If we weren't bad in comparison to the world, we wouldn't have come to see that there's maybe something else going on. But the magical rites that you have done to assume, to gain a sense of well-being, it doesn't matter whether that is religion, or dope, or alcohol, or Bible study, or families. It doesn't matter what it is. Can you see how basic and primal this is? You may have a whole bunch of little tentacles on your well-being one. I mean, you got religion and family and jobs and, you know, and sexuality. But it's all tied to this magical rite or act or series or mantras of getting back to that feeling of well-being and to avoid the feeling of pain and discomfort.
And the negative things that we feel about ourselves are the ones that we think, you know, I'm really bad about this because this gets me into this place of discomfort all the time.
That's right.
Gets me in trouble.
That's right.
And then the good things are things that give us the sense of well-being within ourselves.
That's right.
And others
even if, and you know,
it's all our definition of ourselves comes from these
it
two.
It could be that if you have a sense of well-being, you think you've done something wrong, you have to go back to the place of, it could be.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's all kinds of inner and complicated inner relationships there, but fundamentally, there's only those two positions.
Now, what's the difference between what we're calling a sense of well-being and transcendency or
nothing.
The fruit of the spirit?
Nothing. It's just another magical act you've done. You've just done magical acts.
Well, he's asking about the real thing.
The real thing. Well, as far as you're concerned, there isn't a real thing. This is just all you've done so far has gotten another magical act, and you've gotten some words down on a piece of paper that says fruit of the Spirit, and you've gotten words down on a piece of paper that says Jesus Christ. There is no transcendency for you. Forget it. You're condemned to a lifetime of magic that fails. Got it?
What's the difference between this and like the groves and the high places and stuff we've been doing?
They didn't work.
We wouldn't be doing this.
That's right.
No.
There.
The difference.
This is like background leading up to something that we haven't
right.
touched on.
This is just background.
We haven't hit the subject yet. I mean, the great transgression is the subject.
Right? Well, we hit that.
I think that's what I'm going to call them.
Three-year series.
Yeah.
But back to the beginning of what we talked about, the child, and you've all seen it, even if you've just been around children, that the moment the child becomes aware that it can do something to gain a sense of well-being and avoid stuff, and do something else to avoid the sense of pain or discomfort, then comes implicit in that is first of all their sense that there is a separate self. Then, as a separate self, the need to manipulate and to define in order to exist as the separate self.
Yeah, to come up with how the thing works.
Yeah. Well, they don't even care how it works as long as they can gain a sense of well-being. Mm-hmm. Now, everyone has this process. God defined this process, and you're made like you are. And everything that happened to you up till now was exactly perfect, so that, there is the I or the ego, but it's defined within the grove and the pillar. I mean, that are the high place identities.
What did you just say?
What gives you a sense of well-being, and what gives you pain and discomfort, is different than what gives me a sense of well-being and what gives me pain and discomfort. And all around the room. Right. Always has been, and it's always different with every person, with every child on the face of the earth. That difference is what defines your office in the body of Christ.
Oh, wow. Say that one more time. That's
why. Or the other office.
Well, we don't care about the other. The high place activity is what we are going to be able to walk on in joy. We are going to be able to rejoice in tribulation. We are going to be able to be happy and in a state of joy even in the midst of the utmost depression. There's never going to be a need for a stimulus. We never again will have to perform magical rites to gain a sense of peace. That's the end result of what we're about. But up till now, everything has been perfect. because it is, it, in a sense, you think you've been in priest training since you've been in Bible study. You've been in priest training since before your mother's womb. All right. Well, you got it. How even as a young child, you begin to define yourself by a series of magical acts and gestures. I wished that everybody in stealth would have gone through the language bit, but since we didn't, I'm not going to worry about it. The word mother or mommy is just a bunch of squiggles on a piece of paper, and the sound is the sound of those squiggles that we as a society have conspired to make that have a common meaning. The word mother is a meaningless concept. The word mother is a meaningless sound. M-O-T-H-E-R on a piece of paper is a meaningless bunch of words or marks on a piece of paper, unless by a common deception, a body or a group of people define those squiggles and that sound to have a common meaning. You got it? Okay, so the word or the sound mom bring to the young child or mommy brings back, or the child yelling mommy is an act of magic to bring back the warm body and the voice which seemed to be lost. The sense of anxiety and rage that some of you are experiencing down at this gut level is because you're afraid your magic hasn't worked. You got it?
It's going to stop working.
Huh?
Or it's going to stop working because of what you're saying.
It's going to stop. Now, in the ancient China, they believed an interesting thing. When a baby left alone is able to smile, then the baby becomes a person and then is named. It's not named until then, and it doesn't become a person until it's able to smile if it's alone.
Anybody ever know that?
They peek.
Because the smile reveals a successful magic. In other words, they have been the shaman, or the high priests, the mother and father, but who are really just shamans, have been successful with their initiate to teach that child sufficient magic to have a sense of well-being in a state of separateness. You got it? That defines success in the world, in every culture, in every place, in every time.
Now, it sounds like what you just said implies that it's not possible for a human infant to have a sense of well-being and separateness without magic.
That's right. If a child were left alone, in spite of all of the stories you hear about being raised by wolves, it would die. The child, the hunk of protoplasm, can only survive by magic.
Yeah, because there's cases of a child being left until they're 12 and they never can learn to talk.
Yeah, and there's huge amount of research on babies that are cuddled and held and those that aren't.
In ancient Israel, there was an implicit recognition of the need for this sense of well-being. In ancient Israel and many other ancient cultures, a child wasn't weaned until it was 3 or 4. And in fact, not only that, the child was never, even for a moment, left alone
The mother never once left the child alone for the first 3 to 4 years of its life. From a societal standpoint, it produced the most successful, most well-balanced, best children that have ever been on the face of the earth. Because it implanted the magic, if you will. I mean, I'm not saying it's right or wrong or indifferent that they did that. I'm just saying, as long as the battle was after the flesh, and God was trying with all his might to see whether or not man could be successful by the law, by the prophets, then that is the way to do it.
I mean, they didn't have to deal with the separation until they were older and their magic could be better or something, right?
Well,
when they're 3 or 4 and the mother leaves,
again,
them, they're, they can come
you,
up with...
You won't like this. But the law, from you as a being, this is magic. Including the Torah. Okay. It's magic. It's the best magic that's possible, and it didn't work.
Makes sense. And doesn't work.
And doesn't work. Jesus Christ failed after the flesh. Flesh is no more to be tested, no more to be tried. Flesh can't be redeemed. Now, the smile reveals that the sense of self and a feeling of well-being and intactness has been successful, as we've talked about. And for a moment, the fear and anger about being alone and forgotten can be tolerated. Therefore, the child is a person. Alone, forgotten, yet able to smile. Now, in the spirit, it's now, once the child reaches that state of being, it's going to take him another 30 or 40 years or 50 or 60 years to find out that's a lie. Do you see the loop? What are you looking at?
Well, I'm having a little trouble because it sounds like that's a desirable state.
What? To be cut off, forgotten,
to be forgotten, to be cast aside, etc., etc., and can't be able to smile, it sounds like.
Yeah. Huh? To the flesh, that's the best
thing
to do.
Well, that's your definition of success.
Yeah. My problem is that sounds like rejoicing in tribulation and not being cast, to and fro and on. And it sounds like.
Okay.
It's just making separateness comfortable, though. When you find out that separateness is... First you find out that it's not comfortable. Then you make it comfortable. And then you find out the reality, which is you are separate. Then after that, you have to recognize it as a lie again.
This is a cup. This isn't a cup. This is a cup.
Yeah. I never have figured that.
Okay. That smile, that definition of self, that sense means that the sense of a separate existence can be tolerated as long as immediate satisfaction enables the child to control his fears. Now, the immediate satisfaction that enabled the child to control his fears can take many forms. It can be a bottle. It can be a teddy bear. It can be a blanket. It can be television. It can be, as the child grows older, a plan. But either way, it's simply a means by which that sense of separateness, the sense of a separate existence, and the feeling of helplessness and anxiety and impending doom because of that separateness, it means it can be tolerated for the moment by all of these devices that man brings into the equation. Now, look around and think about yourselves for a moment. Your sense of the separate self, you've learned 1,000 devices to avoid the feeling of impending doom. Those devices define you. Now, all of them are magic. They're magic, image formations, etc., etc., plans. You know, the wild thing then is that it enabled you to tolerate religion. We got to put religion there. It enabled you to tolerate the certainty of your aloneness. Now, the magic and the image formation are the outcome of all of your disillusionment and all of your frustrations and all of your sense of impending dooms and all of your anxiety and all of your feeling of separation. And so, and they serve as the defense, your only defense. And these then are the instruments of how you've defined yourself. Now, for us, we no longer need the instruments. We no longer need the magic. Because He is resurrected in us. We live by His faith. And all of those things and devices and the I Ams that have defined you are only now the chaff that we're going to blow away. Now, to do what I've just done in this room tonight, if I did this on the radio to a group of strangers, there would be suicides like you can't believe. There would be, it would be awful. But we can do it in here. We can start this process in here because He is resurrected. And I can, with full authority and full confidence, attack that false you. Now, it is the real dragon. It is the number one head. It's the main head on the seven-headed in the book of Revelation. It's the one that is going to be destroyed by the sword. It's the dragon that is hidden away in the cavern, or it's the Loch Ness monster under your subconscious sea that is protecting this being, this sense that somehow, even if it isn't as good, at least it's mine. It's even if this sense of well-being I know has failed, it's still better than the unknown. I'm here to tell you, the unknown is far better. When your sense of self is totally independent of any activity that goes on around you, it's independent of what anybody thinks about you. It's independent, more importantly, of what you think of yourself. Now, we can't go to the burnt offering until you see that all of this is left outside the door. You understand?
Yeah.
Now again, let me read what I read. Psalm 19, hear me. Who can understand his error? Cleanse thou me from these secret faults. Keep back me, your servant, from presumptuous sin. Let them no longer have dominion over me. Then shall I be upright, and I shall be innocent from the great transgression. Let then the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, my strength and my redeemer. That doesn't mean sitting around reading the Bible. It means that you have brought every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ, and that you have you're in a state of continual readiness to revenge any disobedience in this temple when you see it. Now, I don't know, you know, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. We've never done this attack before. We've played games with the molten images and your emotional content of this and your high place identity, and this is the battle royal. This is your definition of you. This will bring to bear every element of your being that has defined and protected your sense of survival, and it's the survival of the fittest. And so only the fittest of the things that you've gone through have remained. Do you understand? Mm-hmm. But perfected love has cast out all fear. Whom the Lord, whom the Son has made free, is free indeed. No more religion. This defines your exit, your total exit from Babylon. Does everybody understand what we're about?
Barbara gave me something to read today.
The thing about reaching down inside and plugging out the root. That's what this sounds like. Well, the reason this is so strange and weird is that I've talked to a couple of you about this, that this can only be done in a body of people who, number one, know each other intimately. Number two, have a true sense of what family means. This is no longer, I mean it is, but it's not like in the groups that you're beginning to, that's a place to die. It's a place to give their life. And then for us, for a while now, it's been a place where the fruit can grow and be seen, and et cetera, et cetera. This is the threshing floor. And your definition, this isn't going to be like, you know, okay, Gary is on the hot seat. It's like your definition of Gary is not real unless it's I am, you are. In other words, you have, in order for you to define Gary, you have to define everybody else in the room. You have to have a hot seat, not just for Gary's definition of self. You have to have a hot seat for Gary's definition of Judy, and a hot seat for your definition of Rex, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Because you understand? You have no definition of self without comparison.
It's like there's a sense of which it's all been a shared line among us. Each definition of each person has realized that we've all shared.
We all have to give up our definitions of Gary as well as just the
And he has to give up his definition of you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now,
call it a sense of well-being or whatever. To, you know, it's been transformed into, you know, from that place of impending doom to, you know, something else.
That's great.
Impending well-being.
Impending well-being.
It's going to be a long list.
Yeah. Well, it's going to take its mana. It's going to take its. Obviously, it's not going to go. I mean, I don't want to trivialize anything, but most of you. Your sense of yourself, your sense of self, is only it's only against one or two other persons.
Yeah, now, comparisons.
Oh, you only care what one or two other persons think.
Well, no, it's not that you care about it, but it's like it doesn't define you. But everyone, like Gary's sense of self is a part of his sense of self is his sense of you. But I think a greater part of Gary's sense of self is his sense of me. Now, and it may be one or two other. But I mean, it's like, you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean,
he defines himself by his association with you.
I'm kind of like him. I'm glad I'm not like him.
So like stars, feature players, and extras.
Yeah, and every one of you for this. Every one of you, the life in this arena, in this body, is a Greek tragedy or comedy. It's a drama. It's the two-faced thing. And in this stage, every one of you has a different play that you've written. And in the play, as Harry said, there are stars and supporting actors. And for Pam's play, her stars are different than for Barbara's play or Darlene. But we have always, it's the same supporting actors. We're a traveling troupe. But, again, because of the nature of it, and I don't mean to say this for any ego reasons, in every one of your plays, I am the star. That's the nature of being a rabbi. I may not be the star, I mean there may be, but I am one of the main players in your play. Now.
Yeah, it's sort of like if that's not the case,
then
you're out on the periphery.
Huh?
If that's not the case, then you're out on the periphery.
Well, then I'm not a rabbi.
No, not you. I mean the individual, if that's not the case, then that individual is out on the periphery and the body's not
here. Well, anyway.
They wouldn't be here.
Well, they might be here, but not really here.
I'm going to read something at Paul Ruff. We must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ. Huh? We must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ. Yeah. That everyone may receive the things done in body according to that he hath done, whether it be good or bad. Edifying or not edifying. Knowing that, which is knowing therefore the terror of God.
Yes, read this.
What?
You didn't have to read this.
Oh,
oh God.
Larry didn't know whether to laugh or cry.
He's just sort of whimpering.
Knowing, therefore, the terror.
Oh, that one in particular.
It's all sorts of.
Knowing, therefore, the terror of God, we persuade men. But we are made manifest unto God, manifest meaning totally open. We are made manifest unto God. And I trust also are made manifest in your consciousness. I can't even say the word. For we commend not ourselves again unto you, but give you occasion to glory in our behalf, that you may have somewhat to answer them which glory in appearance and not in heart. For whether we be crazy beside ourselves, it is to God, or whether we be sober or spiritually normal, it's for your sake. For the love of Christ constraineth us, because we thus judge, that if one died for all, then were all dead. And he that died for all, and that he died for all, that they which live should not henceforth live unto themselves. That's all we're talking about here, is the empowerment to no longer live unto yourself. But unto him which died for them and rose again, wherefore henceforth know we no man after the flesh. Yea, though we have known Christ after the flesh, yet now henceforth know we him no more. Therefore, if any man be in Christ, he is a new creature. Old things are passed away. Behold, all things are become new, and all things are of God. Now, the old things, the passing away of the old things, have been, the old things in this metaphor are the chaff, which has acted as a incubator or a cradle for the seed. Now it's time for the chaff. Okay, but now it served its purpose. Now we can boldly declare, what is the chaff to the wheat? No more magic. Even if you put Jesus' name on the magic. Especially no more magic like that. No more definition of self that's based on the fear and the sense of hopelessness and impending doom. That's the self of the Antichrist.
So the sense of impending doom is very justified.
Oh, yeah. That's why I told you. You're doomed to a life of failed magic.
You must appear in the judgment seat. And look.
What?
See if your magic works
here. Well, you don't have to worry about the judgment seat. See if your magic works here.
Oh, we're still going to go through with this. I thought we preached it all. No. Just all the things we have to do. Thinking about the dirt, but then I started thinking about. That's wild. It's an unending list, though.
I can't remember the story you told about your dad.
Yeah?
You know, about the perimeter defense and fortifications and supplies and all that kind of stuff. I keep thinking of that because I can see where I spent 43 years maintaining the perimeter defense and making sure everything's in order within the perimeter. Supplies and stuff.
No.
Protecting the great transgressor, which is what all our magic does. It keeps them safe and performing.
I hope and pray that you all... I was having a discussion with, I guess it was Harry and Doug, Barbara, that I can't imagine anybody in the body lying to me. I mean, and it was because Tyra just told a bald-faced lie when she was sitting next to me. It was so obvious. It was just, but she did it cutely, you know, that little smile. But you have to see that when you are working and defining yourself, you have to do it without judgment. You have to do it without saying whether or not you can justify that. You understand me? Otherwise, this exercise will be one of futility for you. When you put down, I am not, whatever, you can't consider whether or not you can justify it. It just has to be what it is, instantly, without judgment. If you think that you have to justify it, you will enter into a realm of he was a liar from the beginning. Why? Because he had to lie by the use of magic to judge. You will give it all back to the enemy, and this will be a futile exercise. If you think of this as some form of punishment, you're probably right. No. If you think of this as some form of, I'm sorry. If you think of it as a form of punishment, then you will have missed the meaning of the sin offerings. If you think, the purpose of going through this is to transform all of that so that you can present yourself as a living sacrifice. It's not to judge any of it. You understand? If you think this is stupid, tell me. If you think I'm going into places that we have no business going, talk to me.
What place did that possibly be? I can't imagine. Why me? It's out in the world falling off. Falling off the dump.
Question somebody asked about, what is the difference between this and the high place identity? What do you know? The stuff we've done before, the high place identity, the molten images, the pillars. The only answer that just occurred to me is like this somehow or another is the thing that's on the other side of the burnt offering. I mean, what we've done before was maybe, seeing the other side of the trespass offering or the sin offering or, some other level of apprehension prior to this, but this, because it doesn't sound, in a sense, much different from, what we've done, especially with the high place identity. But
yeah, it is. It's massively different. Yeah.
Okay.
Obviously,
perhaps we
interpreted it entirely wrong.
Perhaps we need to go over this really quick. I can
see. Don't you see, every other aspect of the high place activity has been by nature, because it's past, defining past activities, etc., it's been subtly an act of justification.
Right.
You understand that?
Okay,
if you are worshiping a molten image of gold, you're trying to define, so that justifies why you're doing it.
Oh.
If you're worshiping a silver image, it justifies why you're doing it. If your high place identity is the image.
The image itself, because it's there.
Right. It then justifies. This is, if you're acting in a certain way, it's because of a high place identity. Or if this and thus is going on, it's because this. It's something that is defendable. It's your actions are justifiable by the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this has no past component.
Okay.
This has, therefore, it's the only attack for which nothing is justified. I'm not going to try to say, now you're a troglodyte or you're a... That's... No. No. And I'm not going to...
Switch.
No, yeah, let me show you what it is.
It's everything that I think about myself, all those things, the reverse pyramid, go back to this point of when I first began this process of responding to feeling separate. And that's everything, the whole pyramid, whatever it is at this point, which is way out there, is me, and it all springs from magic entirely. And it's not like this part of me is, this is, you know, okay, I'm a sorcerer because I do these things over here. It's like everything. Every time I think of myself and have one of these typical, quote unquote, responses to something, a typical response immediately will call to my mind, you know, this is sorcerer.
That's right.
And so you go, I don't know what you do. We haven't got that part yet.
Okay.
To this point,
go, bah!
The burnt offering is not a sin offering because, you know, it goes to the root.
Let no man deceive you by any means, for that day for except there come a falling away first, and that man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition, who opposeth him and exalteth himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that that he as God sitteth in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. Now, in a sense, that's what... The mystery of iniquity... Let me go on. Remember you not that when I was yet with you, I told you these things. And now you know what withholdeth, that he might be revealed in his time. For the mystery of iniquity doth already work. Only he who now letteth will let until he be taken out of the way. And then shall that wicked be revealed, whom the Lord shall consume with the spirit of his mouth, and destroy with the brightness of his presence. I mean, let me go to another one. Let me show you another one. Angel said unto me, Wherefore dost thou marvel? I will tell thee the mystery of the woman, and of the beast that carrieth her, which hath seven heads and ten horns. The beast that thou sawest was and is not, and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit, and go into perdition. And they that dwell in the earth shall wonder, whose names are not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, when they behold the beast that was and is not, and yet is. And here is the mind which hath wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains in which the woman sitteth. There are seven kings. Five are fallen. One is, and the other is not yet come. And when he cometh meaning revealed, he must continue for a short space. Now, I don't want to go into all that yet, but that's where we are. That whore is sitting on seven hills, seven mountains.
Yep.
Five of them are gone. One is. Am I communicating at all? I didn't want to get into that.
When you talk about it, you can't imagine anybody lying to you. It's like, as long whenever I have my perceived sense of well-being. When I'm in that perceived sense of well-being, I can tell the truth. My idea of what telling the truth is, or my idea of being honest. But whenever I'm in that sense of anxiety, there is nothing but, you know, every feeling I have is like I'm hiding, I'm lying, I'm skulking around. But this, you know, but always trying to attain this image of well-being, you know, as soon as that's interrupted, though, then all this other stuff, you know, it falls apart. I mean, it comes on.
If the resurrection of Christ is dependent only on the power of God, it's not dependent on how you feel.
Yeah.
It's not dependent on if you understand it or not. It's not dependent on how somebody looks at you. It's not dependent on whether or not you have money or not have money. It doesn't depend on whether you've been successful or not successful. The resurrection of Christ is by the power of God. Now, all of this I ams believe that the resurrection of Christ is based on my perception of the resurrection of Christ. You understand? And so therefore, you can't teach. Why? Because you don't believe. You can't live except as the Gentiles live, because your definition of living is dependent on the way the Gentiles define living. You can't have peace because things aren't going the way that your I am defined them. There's no possible definition that's right. He's either resurrected, independent of your activity, or he's not. Christ was born in a manger. He was born in a cave because there was no room for him in the place where men abode. He was born in this crap in the cave. There's no room where you abide for him. There's no room for him where you believe that you have to have, where you can abide, where you can have it right. There's no room for him in the place where there's another person, i.e. where you're dependent on somebody else's response to you. He's born in a place where only his mother is. His father is probably... you can't be there, folks. But I'm not getting, I'm doing that. Die! Oh, but I don't know. Oh, but I gotta get this. Die! You're already dead. You just don't know it. The evil one is lying to you, so he has put these conditions on. The evil one has defined life.
So he had to get born in a stable because the inn ballrooms were full of dead men?
This room is full of a dead man. Hundreds of them. Amen?
Yeah.
What?
Say, take a big guy. I'm about to run out of 2 hours of tape.
One, two, three, four, five, six. Take a big guy.